Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. I'm Matt Cos in my wine cork socks. That's Bob Mackowitz. How you doing, Bob?
I'm good, Matt. I'm feeling a little better. I got pretty sick last week.
Right. Yeah, what happened?
Just hit with the norovirus. Mm-hmm. So it was carnivalesque. It was spectacular. And then I got what I like to call medical double jeopardy, because I actually caught a cold while I had the flu, because my daughter was home from school with a bad cold. So somehow with the flu, I caught a cold, which feels like it shouldn't be allowed.
No, it's like
you're already sick.
Yeah. It's like when you're in your 40s and you still get a zit. It's like, listen, God, you took away my metabolism. You replaced it with back hair. And now you're giving me a zit. If you're going to give me a 15-year-old disease, give me a 15-year-old metabolism and a smooth, smooth back.
Man, that is a brilliant observation. So here's what I'm thinking. Anybody who listens to the last pod, I was giving you a hard time about being sick and you pretending you're not sick. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then within 2 days, I had an Old Testament illness where I was just laid out for 3 days praying for either health or the end.
Yeah, one
just,
or the other.
Just get me out of here.
Nothing in the middle.
Nothing in the middle. And then I got sick again. And I realized as I was convalescing, here's what happened. The universe caught me making fun of you being sick and said, oh, no.
That's right.
No, you don't go after Matt and get away scot-free.
Hell yeah.
So somehow the universe is so in your favor that I teased you about getting a cold and it gave me bubonic plague.
Well, I hope you've learned your lesson.
I have.
Actually, no, you haven't. You make fun of me all the time. You were making fun of my socks when I got here, but I'm glad you're feeling better.
But Matt, your socks have corks on them, wine corks, and you're a sommelier. And normally I would say something like, Matt, are you so obsessed with your own interests that you can't even look down without being reminded about how good your life is? But I'm not going to say that.
No, you wouldn't. That'd
because
be mean.
I can't afford the risk.
Who knows what sort of plague would befall on you?
I could get hit with fiery hail between here and St. Lawrence Market when I go to pick up dinner.
And so let me tell you this, Bob. I'm a hero. I'm going to tell you why. Do you have a hard time? You're about to jump in. Yep.
I stopped myself.
Okay. You ever have a hard time shopping for someone? Christmas, birthday, Easter, whatever. Do you have a hard time sometimes with some of your friends, family members, nephews, nieces, where you're not sure what to get them as a gift? That ever happened in your life?
It has, sure.
Yeah, happens all the time. I never will have that. Everyone knows. Oh, shoot, I got something for Matt. It's his birthday. You just get me a bottle of wine. As long as it's not some big, fat Australian red wine, I'll be happy. And I make life easier for others because I have a thing that you can always go to as a gift. And I'm very low maintenance when it comes to that. So my wine thing is also a heroic act.
Just as a quick aside, is because you have crazy pet peeves, is a big bodied Australian red basically the same thing as an NFL team drafting an running back too high?
Oh, God. I love it. I was like, oh, Saquon Barkley.
Anyway. There you go. Yeah. Okay, just checking, just checking. Okay, all right. So here's what I can say, Matt. You're a student of the game. You like your media and you go back decades. You have a really good frame of reference. So you remember the Twilight Zone.
Of course.
Do you remember the episode when there's the boy who has the powers and he can hear your thoughts, and if you're not thinking positive things around
you, wishes you to the field.
He banishes you to the field of his mind?
Yeah.
You are that boy.
Mm-hmm.
I now will only have positive thoughts around Matt.
Yeah.
And every time you say something asinine, like look at my corked feet, or you know, any number of things between now and the end of the show, you know what I'm going to say?
What?
That's good, Matt.
Ooh.
It's good that Matt thinks that.
So if I go all Mosel Riesling is dry, then you would say what?
It's good, Matt. It's good that Matt thinks that.
Yay. Actually, it's not. Mosel is actually classically higher level residual sugar than any other region, including Rheingau and Rheinheisen. See, I'm testing this. I'm testing this right now.
I was sick enough that I can make it through at least a few of these. We got a lot of sports to get to. But before we do that, remind me, with the impending tariff war or the delayed tariff war or
wherever we are today,
at some point, I think you owe it to the audience to give a comprehensive list or at least a fairly detailed list of the top three Canadian wines they can buy.
Oh, I'm going to do more than that.
Do you want to do it now? Or?
Well, I will say this, and I'm going to throw it out on my Instagram, Twitter, and I can give specific wines. First, for everyone who loves California Chardonnay, don't worry. Ontario has you covered, even and BC as well. We have every type. We have big, rich, buttery, lean, stainless steel, great concrete egg fermented ones from Hidden Bench. But beyond that, to all the men out there listening who are like, I don't want Ontario red wine. It's not strong enough. You're wrong. You are so wrong. Two Sisters, Cassaba, Kirby Estate. Go try a Checkmate Merlot from BC. We have Southbrook Bordeaux blends. We have so much, Bob. Don't worry. I know it's the same for you. You love your California Cabernet. Ontario has got you covered. So that's my first message. Everyone out there, go explore. Shop local, buy local, support local farmers. It's all out there.
Is it fair to say, I'm not a wine drinker, but is it fair to say most people drink probably the same one or two bottles of the wine 50% of the time, at least?
Absolutely. People get nervous, they get intimidated, but also beyond that, they like what they like, and they're like, I like this wine, I'm good with it. And
that's kind of like, you know, okay, I don't like Diet Pepsi, I prefer RC Cola.
Yeah.
And so when you buy pop, you think, okay, RC Cola.
100%.
And you don't need to explore. Because you like it. So is there a version of this trade war, wherever we're at, where Canadian wines get a real lift because people decide they have a taste for something and then they don't care when the California stuff comes back?
I hope so. And by the way, that's not even me shitting on California wines. And the California winemakers, trust me, they're in California. I bet they don't support what Trump is doing. So wild guess. So I feel bad for them as well. This is, as I said in a tweet, it's not about patriotism. It's not about politics. It's about there's really great fucking wine here in Ontario or BC, from Prince Edward County to Okanagan and everyone in between. So I hope this just opens 8% of wine drinkers now start buying more local wine. They won't, trust me, you won't go wrong. And if you can't afford Burgundy anymore, because who can? Ontario will scratch that itch.
Okay, so just give me one name. If I'm going to the liquor store and I'm thinking I want to buy Canadian, give me a red and a white and a wild card.
Okay, for the white, we will go Westcott Chardonnay. For the red, we will go either Hidden Bench or Thomas Batchelder for the Pinot Noir. And then if you want something bigger, I'm also trying to think of which of these wineries are at the LCBO, because a lot of them you can only buy at the wineries. For the bigger ones, you know what? Henry Appelham. They got like in the early 20s, some Bordeaux blends, Cab Merlots that just really punch above the weight. So there's three.
Because this is the Appease Matt edition, I'm going to ask. Another wine question.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned something called Hidden Bench.
Yeah.
And then something else called like Thomas Batchelder. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you get pissed off when good wines have stupid names? Because then you have to say the stupid name when you're buying it. Like Thomas Batchelder, that's his name. Fred's Guacamole.
Well, first off, Thomas Batchelder is his name, and you'd like him. This guy.
No, that's not the stupid name. Hidden Bench is the stupid name, not the guy's name.
Okay. There's nothing stupid at Hidden Bench. Well, it's because it's the Benchlands is the appellation. It's the appellation, the sub-appellation, excuse me, is the Benchlands. And so he just went with Hidden Bench.
So would you be pissed off if someone had like a good wine and they named it Gone Fishing?
No. Ooh, and like no E at the end of Gone?
Yeah, no. Like Gone, apostrophe G-O-N, and then Fishing.
Yeah. Yeah. Nope. If it's good wine, I'm the guy that's
It's a guy's foot on the label with a string tied around the toe that leads out to a bobber that's floating in the lake.
I'm good with all that. The only ones I'm not good with, it's not in the bottle. Because listen, I don't even care about the stemware. I drink box wine. I can both be snooty and very just non-snooty. I don't like it. You know, the Instagram memes is like, it's got to be 11 a.m. somewhere or, but first my wine. Like all those Instagram things. Ugh. Or this one. Instagram, by the way, to everyone who puts out those videos, you're not funny. You're not.
So the people that say, I just have one glass of wine, and it's a giant novelty-sized glass that fits an entire bottle.
You only have one glass of wine. It's a whole bottle. I hate that shit.
Okay, so basically what I just did there was the equivalent of Trudeau saying, yes, Donald, we'll give you a fentanyl czar.
Hooray, get rid of all that fentanyl.
All right. Actually, not a bad idea.
It's pretty awful. Theory, yes. Yeah, to Donald Trump and the Republicans, getting rid of fentanyl, good thing. Sometimes what you do, anyway.
You know, it feels like, how do we not talk about booing the American anthem here? We got to talk about Luka, obviously.
Yeah,
it's the biggest trade in modern sports history. But can we at least touch on the booing thing?
Of course.
So booing across the country after the announcement that there were going to be tariffs that effectively could decimate the Canadian economy.
Yeah.
And so here in Toronto at the Raptors game and Ottawa, they're booing across the country. The American anthem gets booed. Now that there's a pause, how do we handle this one?
We pause the booing.
Do we?
Yeah, we pause the booing.
Do we?
All right. Well, here's the thing. I'm all fine with the booing because this is different than, like, you know, even Bush, Iraq war, the booing. At the very least, you could argue, well, you know, he's at the time. It's like, well, there's weapons of mass destruction and Saddam Hussein or whatever. You can make an argument for no, booing bad. This booing, it's simple. It's boo, you're economically devastating my life, my family, my small business, that restaurant. It's a very simple one. Boo, boo, boo. I'm all for it.
That's a hostile act. It's not like a disagreement with a policy, as consequential as that policy may be, the Iraq war. I mean, this is literally a directed and intentional hostile act, and so you boo. Mm-hmm. But it's on pause. And here's why I don't think it's so simple. The rhetoric, truthful or not, through the whole thing was, we're going to destroy your sovereignty.
Right.
We're going to destroy your economy. You will eventually come to us. That's not really the conversation of an ally or a friend. It's the conversation of an enemy. So we can sit there and say, well, we shouldn't take them seriously. But why wouldn't we take it seriously? We've already seen, like, we're already pouring $1 billion into the frickin' border. And everybody knows we have to do it to appease this guy. And frankly, the border is more porous coming from the States up to Canada with guns than it is with illegal immigrants and fentanyl going to the States. We should have been more pissed off before. I like what Charlie Ingalls said. He said, yeah, I'll put military on the border if it keeps their guns out.
Yeah.
So we're not in a place where these are our buddies.
No.
And so maybe, would it be wrong to boo? Let's start there.
No, of course it would not be wrong to boo. I feel bad, especially when it's like a teenager singing the national anthem.
So bad.
So, but at least here's the good thing.
Okay, I have a follow-up question. Finish, okay. And then...
Just quick. When it happened the first time, I heard they interviewed the singer. She's like 15, 16 years old. And she said it was difficult, even though the crowd afterwards cheered for her. But at least going forward, every, you know, sub-20-year-old a cappella band, I mispronounced that, they know going in, all right, there's going to be booing. It's not against me or because I couldn't hit that high note. It's against tariffs. So boo away.
It's. I was thinking, should they maybe go to taped anthem and just have the person come out live and sing "O Canada"? Because it is brutal to like, this is a big moment for somebody.
Yeah,
I think there's going to be boos until you're sure. Do you just like you basically use the PA system and play the anthem?
It's a great idea, but. Also, if you're booing the American national anthem, what happens if Austin Matthews from Arizona, you know, a state that's often voted red, if he scores a goal, boo, like how far do we take the booing?
It's an interesting question. It made me think with the NHL, even though hockey is a big part of Canadian identity, the league itself is fairly American. Mm-hmm. Its headquarters are in New York City. There's a lot of Canadians in it, obviously, but there's people from all over the world, and most of the teams are American. Most of the dollars generated are American. So I'd call it an American league with some Canadian teams.
Well, there still is more Canadian players than American players.
Yeah, but as a league, as a business, it feels more like an American business than a Canadian business. Mm-hmm. So you know what I was thinking, actually? There are two sports that jump out at me because I racked my brain. What is really Canadian? The CFL, obviously. Women's hockey, interestingly. I feel like I could probably get more patriotic over women's hockey than I could men's, just because it still has more of the underdog mentality that defined the NHL for years and became of our, like, that's our identity, is pond hockey and people making something out of sport and themselves. You know, the NHL now is basically just a feeder system for rich kids. If you're not rich in the GTHL, you're fucked. You're not going to the NHL. It's for rich kids. It's the Ivy League for sports.
It is much harder to get into the NHL. You got to be at least middle class.
You got to be rich.
Yeah. And if, by the way, you got to be middle class and seriously in debt.
Yeah. It's a rich kid sport.
Yeah.
Ice time, equipment, special coaching. We're so far away from just banging cow patties off the barn door. It's not even funny. But women's hockey still, I think, has a grassroots narrative that Canadians can get behind.
Also, women's hockey feels like Canada versus America is so much a part of women's hockey. You know, I mean, you go back to like Sochi, Torino, so many of these Olympic great moments was women's hockey. Yeah, I could get that. Come on, Scepters.
Yeah, exactly. I've watched some. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm not watching a ton of hockey that isn't the Leafs these days. And the Leafs I'm basically watching out of, I don't know, Stockholm syndrome or something.
You know what? You hold on. Totally off topic. Watching the Leafs, was Ian Holm in that The Day After Tomorrow where everything freezes? Remember the movie with like Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah.
And they're being chased by snow.
Mm-hmm.
And then like you have the scientists and they're up north and they're monitoring. You know, they're not watching the whole time, but they're monitoring what's going on, looking for disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like being a Leafs fan? You know, you're just monitoring what's going on with the goalies, what's going on with the power play, and you're just like, oh, a storm is coming. Like it feels sometimes when you're watching the Leafs, it's like that.
I did pick up the Athletic today and noticed that the Leafs were second in the Atlantic. And I thought, oh, okay.
Yep.
Just noticing.
A little behind Florida.
Just a couple quick things, then an admission I have to make. Also curling, super Canadian.
Super Canadian, yes.
A ton of fun and super Canadian. And as for booing, here's the compromise that I came up with. Mm. Like if I was at the game, I wouldn't boo, but I wouldn't stand.
Right.
I'll stand when the Canadian anthem starts. I'm not going to voice my displeasure, but I'm also not going to announce my support. As long as Trump's in there, I can't support the Americans because the Americans can't support us.
Right.
So that's my, I recommend everybody just sit and don't clap. And then when the Canadian anthem starts, stand up and sing.
And cheer like hell. So the decibel level contrast is the protest.
So I have an admission to make before we get to Luka. Unbelievable that like we're going to be 20 minutes in and not talk about the biggest trade in modern sport history.
It's kind of on par. You know, it's kind of on brand, but yeah.
I don't think I ever mentioned this to on the pod for sure. And maybe to you even in private, but do you remember how the last season there was a show on Crave called The Rebuild, and it was about the rebuilding of the Montreal Canadiens?
Yes.
Did you ever look at the credits of that show?
No.
I wrote it.
What? I didn't know that.
Yeah, because Strombo voiced it, and they contacted me, and they said the original copy was in French.
Yeah.
And they said, we would like someone not to just put it into English, but to put it into kind of a Strombo English, which I've done a lot professionally. I've written for him.
Of course.
So I have a good sense of his cadence and what he likes to write. So if you look at it, they actually asked me what title I wanted.
Ooh, what title?
I told him, but author.
Author.
So it actually says author Bob Mackowitz.
How, first off, that's awesome.
Thank you.
Just wanted to say congratulations.
Thank you.
And that makes so much sense.
Uh-huh.
So, and I do mean that. Mm-hmm. In a time of shrinking media, anytime you can get a job and of something of significance that's out there and has been mass consumed, it should be celebrated and attention must be paid. Now that we've done that.
Right.
Author feels really pretentious.
Oh, so good though, right? they asked me,
mm-hmm.
and I suspect it may have been a translation issue,
yeah.
which I was willing to go with.
I feel you should have worked in some Latin author, empress, or empertas, or
de publicus.
Yes.
Authoress de publicus.
Yes, something Latin-y to throw in to really knock it up a notch.
So something happened,
yeah,
and we haven't really talked about this, but I spent a lot of time watching the show and working with people who are deep into the Habs world. And it was actually a really good show. I liked it a lot. I liked working on it a lot. And what I discovered was I actually started to like the team a lot.
Well, you get involved.
I got emotionally involved.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about, God, I hate the Leafs, you know? They always just make me nuts. They're so rich. They treat the city like shit.
Are you cheating?
They basically hung the city's fan base upside down by the ankles, and they shake it up and down until all the change falls out of your pockets. They disappoint year after year. And I watched the show about the Habs. It was like these scrappy underdogs with this incredible history. And, you know, they have people in the, you know, they got people wearing Béliveau jerseys in the stands and Lafleur. And you think, oh, God, that's...
It's the history.
That's quite a legacy. That is. You know? That's quite a legacy.
Bob, this is the image I have right now.
Uh-huh.
So at home is your Maple Leafs partner.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't suspect a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just coincidentally run into a coffee shop. And there's Montreal Canadiens. And she's just reading a book. And like, hey, I... Sound and Fury. I've read that as well.
Wrote my senior thesis on that.
This feels like you're not cheating yet on the Maple Leafs, but you know, you're there's a little dalliance, a little flirtation.
Yeah, Matt, I think we're past that. I think I've gone for afternoon coffee with the Habs at this point.
Mm.
I kind of like them better.
But Bob, here's the thing.
They're a lot more likable.
I'm sure they are. Do you know why? Because they've got that new franchise smell of a team it's a nice combination of on the rise,
mm-hmm.
young talent, no expectations. And with no expectations, you're just there to enjoy it. Hey, it's fun. Same thing in a relationship. When you're married, you got kids, there are expectations.
And history.
With this one, you got Leafs, you got history. Montreal, you got mystery. And right now, you're flirting, you're enjoying it. But in the end, you got to come back. You gotta come back to the mother of your children.
Do the Leafs need to meet me halfway, though? Because maybe if we're having problems, there's just systemic problems in our relationship. And if I'm looking elsewhere at this other team, is that not an indication that at home maybe things aren't as good as they could be?
So is meeting halfway scoring 3 goals in a round 2 playoff series?
I think meeting halfway would be, how about some tickets that somebody who isn't a Bay Street lawyer could afford?
Yeah, that's not going to happen. And by the way, even a lot of the
Well, then all I got to say to that is Le Gloria, le Bleu Blanc et Rouge.
First off, no, it's not going to happen. The Edmonton game on Saturday, I asked Amy, I was rewatching the game Sunday morning, you know, getting that out of the way, even though I didn't really talk Leafs at all this week. It's been all Luca. But I asked Amy, close your eyes and I'm going to play you a Leafs goal. I'm like, where is this game happening? She's like, this game's happening in Toronto. I'm like, no, this is in Edmonton.
Right.
And ticket prices are cheaper, to your point. And it is remarkable how loud it is.
It would cost me less to fly to Carolina and book a hotel stay overnight and watch a game than it would for me to go from Parkdale to Bay Street, watch a game here, and go back home for $3.25 on the TTC.
What do you think also would take longer?
About the same time.
The TTC to ACC or fly to Carolina. Yeah.
I didn't know this Porter fly to North Carolina.
Oh, no. Not shuttle buses. Oh, good fucking God. No, not shuttle buses. Oh, we're doomed.
Oh, mercy. By the way, you know who's the real winner out of this trade war?
Mm.
It's the Four Nations Cup.
Oh, my God. You're right.
Because now I am going to cheer the shit out of Canada. I was... kind of interest. Having seen a lifetime of international tournaments, this one felt kind of prefab,
mm-hmm.
and they were trying to drum up interest in something that we've seen a lot before.
Yeah.
It was kind of like back in wrestling when they used to book the same match over and over again. But now.
Now it's Dino Bravo versus Sergeant Slaughter. Fuck you, Slaughter. Here comes Canada's strongest man, Dino Bravo.
Will you listen here, maggot?
A lot of maggot talk back then. But you're right about the Four Nations.
Come on.
Face-off.
Oh, whatever. Yeah. Are you not more now emotionally committed to watching Canada win? And that Canada-US game. It feels almost like when Canada plays U.S. in the World Juniors.
Yeah. You know what we need for this? Now you got to have both the leaders in different boxes. There's got to be, you know, Trump in one box and I guess still Trudeau or whatever politicians we want. Mm-hmm. We can have a potpourri. Trudeau could be there, Polyev, Ford, a couple NDP. Let's balance it out.
Okay, so I'm spitballing here.
Yeah.
Trump's up there in the box at the ACC or whatever they call it these days.
Yeah.
And kind of like in Rocky IV, Canada wins and John Tavares skates to the middle of the ice and says, you know, when this started, I didn't like you guys much and maybe you didn't like me much either.
Yeah.
But I could see that everybody could change. Everybody can change. Yep. And then Tavares looks up to the box and kind of like the Gorbachev character in Rocky IV, yep. Trump stands up and starts to applaud.
It would be, but he'd be plodding the other way and you know, he'd be watching, like sweating with the oldies. I don't know. He'd be watching something that had nothing to do with the match. The funny thing is,
go ahead.
No, the funny thing is about Tavares. You used his name. John Tavares is actually in a battle with the Canadian government right now, the CRA, over taxes.
That's true.
So I have no idea which side he'd be rooting for anyway.
Let's tariff him.
Yeah.
That apparently is the answer to everything. Just 25% of his salary.
Yeah, that's kind of what the CRA is trying to do with signing bonuses.
You know, Matt, I don't want to get too political here. But I'm just going to leave it at this. How the fuck did we get here?
The crazy thing about all of it is, like, I'm far less political, but every now and then... And I have muted the words Trump and Donald. I did it during his first term on my Twitter feed, but it still finds its way in. Like, if you had told me in the early 90s that guy was going to have that much power or be in the news and just be in everyone's consciousness, I'm like, that guy, the real estate buffoon that is every now and then in a music video, ironically, or Howard Stern is talking about him, like that's the guy that had the stupid board game in the early 90s, The Art of the Deal.
I'm going to take it one step further.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to drop it.
Yeah.
Not only is it improbable, it's the most improbable thing, other than the fact that he was reelected after 4 years in which I'm not going to say he sent that mob. I don't know if he sent the mob to the Capitol. That's debatable on one side or the other. But I do know one thing is for sure. He was still president and didn't say anything for like 2 or 3 hours.
Yep.
While people were getting the shit beaten out of the cops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, were getting the shit beat out of them. And they were storming the Capitol. And apparently he just ordered a Diet Coke and watched it like he was watching. It was a day at the Coliseum.
Yeah.
The fact that was actually a plus factor on his campaign. The fact that he actually campaigned on the fact that this happened is why I look at this and say, like, that's the number one thing.
Yes.
Honestly, it is so deranged that people are like, you know what I love about that guy? That armed insurrection against the Capitol where they were going to kill all those politicians. Didn't happen, but they were trying. Man, I love the way he got behind that. That's crazy. Okay. Enough of booing. I'm gonna stop myself here, Matt. I'm actually going to put the thing down because you've been on the air for the last couple days.
Yeah.
Discussing the Luka Doncic trade to L.A., Anthony Davis going to Dallas. Nobody seems to make sense of it. You've been talking about it for 2 straight days. Your best case for why this happened?
I have no fucking clue.
Right.
Again, you first heard about it. You thought, like, when everyone thought it was a hack, when even Shams and all the NBA insiders had to go to Twitter and say, no, this is real. This is real. And then we all swung to conspiracy theories, going back to politics for a moment. And we're like, this is Adam Silver wanting to make sure the Lakers are always relevant because LeBron is 40. And then you're like, huh, maybe that's true. Like, it's so crazy that even conspiracy theories seem to make sense. There's so many places with this, but my first thought was about a third of the NBA are tanking. Some teams like Washington, they're alienating their fan base, and it is shameless. It's almost disgusting. And they're all tanking for one reason, for a chance to maybe one day get a player who could be somewhere close to as good as Luka. So you have all these teams tanking, and Dallas is like, nah, you can have him for someone who's 7 years older. It's still mind-boggling. I can't believe this is just about conditioning. I can't believe, because ESPN put out a story, deep dive into what happened. And you can tell they got the Dallas perspective. And it was Nico Harrison was looking at Luka and saw someone who didn't want it as much as Kobe and didn't work as hard as LeBron. Most people don't work as hard as LeBron or Kobe. And that is like, oh, this is about conditioning. This can't be just about conditioning.
It's a bit about $350 million bucks too, because he, if they felt like they couldn't control him at $40 million and get him to really be focused, what's he going to be like when he's making $70 million a year? Usually that tends to go the other way. I'm not defending what the Mavs did.
By the way, I want defense. I want the other side.
I can't do it because he is so good. But I'm reminded back when we were on OTR, we had Jesse Barfield come on, you know, Jay's great slugger, and he was the hitting coach of Seattle at the time. And at the time on Seattle, Ken Griffey Jr. was a kid. And we were talking to Barfield about what it was like to coach, you know, the greatest hitting talent since Willie Mays. And he said, you know, he's so talented, it might cause him problems later because he doesn't stretch. He doesn't hit the weight room the way he needs to. He is so naturally gifted. He doesn't have to treat this like a profession. He can still treat it like a game.
Like Marlon Brando, overweight at the end of his career.
Or any number of people who are so good that they forget the work part of it.
Right.
Bo Jackson. Do you remember how physically talented Bo Jackson was? Could you imagine today having a piece of Bo Jackson's athletic career?
I mean, one of the greatest.
But he didn't last.
Yeah.
And I was reading stuff about Bo Jackson refused to work out. Mm. He actually said the weight room is for wimps.
Really?
He just didn't. He goes, you know, I used to go on the field and it made me laugh because I wouldn't stretch or do any warm-ups and I'd run circles around these
guys. The same stories about Lawrence Taylor.
So maybe if you're Dallas, you're looking at this and you're saying, well, of course, he's a generational talent. He may be an all-time talent. Probably is. But he's also cruising for a breakdown. And then we're on the hook for $350 million bucks. And we're telling him you have to do this stuff. Because there are stories like this, like Ken Griffey Jr. broke down. Bo Jackson broke down. Guys who are generationally talented sometimes break down. Mm-hmm. And we find out later, oh, they didn't work that hard.
Right.
So I'm not justifying this move because maybe, you know, he's 25 and you could get to him. But if you think, if you look at this guy and say, are we going to tie $500 million to this guy? And he can't put down the Cheetos? Maybe there's something to it.
It's, and I love the way you laid it out. And just by bringing in the other historic examples of athletic greatness. And maybe that is it. Maybe it is. And this is the biggest risk. Part of the problem is that when Nico says we value defense. Mm-hmm. The Mavericks lost to Boston in five. Boston scored well below their average in the NBA Finals. You know, and that was a historic offense that didn't blow out the Mavericks because of bad defense. Now, Luka wasn't very good defensively, but Dallas was very good defensively. This also got brought up. There's one statue outside where the Mavericks play. It's Dirk Nowitzki. He's not exactly known for his defense. So the doing this is about defense thing, I don't buy. But I do get it that I understand the idea of they're worried that they can't change Luka. I would have taken that risk that maybe we'll eventually get through to him. He's 25. Maybe he just needs a little bit longer to figure it out. He'll never be Kobe or LeBron, but most people aren't Kobe and LeBron.
But we're talking about him like he is Kobe or LeBron.
Well, he's not.
That's the weird disconnect here. Is, yeah. Yes, talent-wise, that is totally true. But anybody with Instagram has seen enough Mamba mentality videos to know what Kobe was like. We've all watched The Last Dance, and we understand what Michael's competitiveness was like. The truly greats, LeBron wakes up and thinks about how does LeBron win today? Mm-hmm. If he's not going to be that guy, then he's going to be great. But maybe he's going to be Carmelo Anthony.
But
would you say there's no way a team could walk away from Carmelo Anthony, who was at one time the greatest scorer in the NBA, the most naturally talented and gifted
yes.
offensive threat in the NBA at one time was Carmelo Anthony, who won zero titles.
Won zero titles. The difference is 3-4 years ago, Luka dragged Dallas to the Western Finals with his second best player was Jalen Brunson. Well before Brunson is the guy today. The number three scorer was Spencer Dinwiddie. Last year, he helped beat Harden, SGA, Anthony Edwards, and then they lost to Boston. Everyone lost to Boston. What Luka does, his scoring goes up in the playoffs, and his field goal percentage doesn't really go down that much. Luka's done the thing. Can you dominate in the playoffs? Can you make guys around you better? Can you be great offensively? And the answer is yes, over and over and over again. And that's why the conditioning thing doesn't bother me as much. If Luka was great in the regular season, then in the postseason, his numbers went down. If he was like Austin Matthews, then I'm like, okay, I get the conditioning thing. But he's still great when the competitiveness level is and the defensive presence is at a way higher level in the playoffs.
2 points here.
Yeah.
One is natural talent.
Mm-hmm.
Who, if you poll, amazingly, NBA players, do they actually consider to be the most singularly, naturally talented person amongst their peers over and over again?
Could be Kyrie.
It's Kyrie.
Yeah.
It's Kyrie Irving. If you ask NBA players, they will tell you
all the time.
There is no player in the NBA with more natural gifts than Kyrie Irving. Is he the best player in the NBA?
No.
So we agree that there's a connection between performance and skill.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And work ethic and wanting it and all that. Now, Luka is really good. No, he's great. He's fantastic. But if you're his team and you look at this and you say, well, he's got God-given gifts that literally nobody else has, but they're not going to last. Would you give him $500 million?
I would. But when you word it like that, you can at least start to understand the Nico Harrison side to this. And that's what I appreciate about what you're doing. Is that if you truly 100% believe it's only going to go down and that he can't be convinced, it's time to change your lifestyle.
By the way, I wouldn't have done this deal.
Yeah.
Like, I think this is a total mistake. But I've been kind of a little bit amazed by how no one can imagine what Dallas would be thinking.
Well, I think part of it is not the fact that they decided to trade Luka. Why did you not get more? Why was it only with the Lakers? And I understand reading the report.
Mikal Bridges, it was a swap for 5 first rounders.
And by the way, to be fair to Dallas, you are getting Anthony Davis, and Anthony Davis is worth more than draft picks because a lot of those draft picks won't work out. Because they were all about silence, and because maybe they were scared because Chris Paul, the Pelicans were trying to trade him to the Lakers, and then the other owners and Stern found out and said, get the fuck out of here. We're vetoing this deal. Because they were so afraid of it coming out in silence. It was basically Pelinka and Harrison because those guys have a relationship. But how do you not get the 2031 draft pick of the Lakers? How do you not get some pick swaps? How do you not get a little bit more for a guy who's made more first-team All-NBAs by the age of 25 than Jordan or LeBron? That, I think that's the other part that everyone is shocked about.
If Cuban was majority owner, this deal doesn't happen.
Correct. There's no way. Cuban's like, nope, I'm going to bet on it. It's going to get turned around. No way he would allow.
If Matt or Bob was the owner of the Mavs, this deal wouldn't happen.
Correct.
Because we would just try to think, how do I support this guy? Who can I bring in that's going to help him? It's amazing to think, though, that, and this is always so baffling to all of us, is how can trying be an issue? How can being in shape, look, I'm a little out of shape, but there's not a lot of incentive for me to be in shape. It's not like I'm an NBA all-star.
Exactly. As long as every now and then you can make love to your lovely wife, then. I'm doing it for comedy.
Talk about the loss of diminishing returns.
Okay, let me do it again. As long as every night you and your lovely wife get to pound between underneath the sheets, then that's the main motivation. Basically, it's sex every now and then. And having a quality of life when you're in your 80s. That's the main reason for trying.
You know, it's funny. This is 100% true. Just after you finished speaking, the lid popped off of my coffee.
Kind of prematurely popped off the top of your cup.
I think my coffee cup threw up.
Yeah, I know. Well, I can say that because I know your wife doesn't listen to the pod.
That's true.
Yeah.
She has no idea. She thinks I'm at the gym right now. I'm going to your place, and then I'm going to go watch some Habs videos.
Yeah, exactly. You're cheating on your wife and your hockey team. Ooh, and then you know what you do when you come home? You put on a Leafs jersey, you spray yourself with water, and you have a red Good Life bag. Yeah, the gym was great again today.
I remember the lonely guy with Steve Martin where he gets the sweat from the Lakers. Spraying himself with this. Anyway, that's a crazy reference. You know what's amazing to me? I thought about the player movement. And I wondered if in some ways this is a shot against the player movement era.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that, you know, every player had the most cards and teams were just beholden to them. And I wonder if, like, how this will affect that. Because I watched KD being interviewed about this. And he's like, well, if Luka can be moved, anybody can be moved. This is a bit of a Gretzky move. You know, a bit of a Gretzky trade as it affected hockey, where literally anything can happen if this happened. And I wonder if this isn't a sign that the power with the new cap and the second apron and all the new economic realities that the teams face, that they haven't harvested back some power from the players.
Well, they have. I mean, that's what the aprons are for, to make it more difficult for star miserable in a mid-market team just wants to go to LA. It is. That's the part that's most shocking, is that this wasn't superstar player upset, whiny, wants out. Luka didn't know. No one knew. This was kept under wraps. It's the most remarkable part in a league where it's all gossip, gossip, gossip. That's the part that shocks me. It's that Dallas initiated this. You know, this would be like, let's do old school references. I'll do one a little bit more modern. Mine's from the mid-90s. What if Lyle Lovett had said to Julia Roberts, honey, we're done? Like, you remember they were dating? We're like, what are you doing with him?
Fisher Stevens and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes, exactly. And it's like, what? Wait, she didn't dump you? You dumped her? That's what this is.
Okay, wait a minute. We owe ourselves to go down this rabbit hole. Right. Least likely celebrity couples.
Well, I mean, like, you're going to have to give me time. Because to me, the Lyle Lovett, Julia Roberts, maybe because we were watching Sleeping with the Enemy the other day. But that one is the one that always sticks out the most.
You're watching Sleeping with the Enemy the other day? You really are mining your 80s hits, aren't you?
Well, you know, Amy's on the couch.
It was Fatal Attraction. And now it's Sleeping with the Enemy. Matt, yeah. Is everything okay?
Oh, and we watched Rain Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't really follow suit.
Yeah.
But it is an 80s movie, yeah.
Well, technically it was like 90 or 91. But no, it was 80s. It was like 88, 89. Anyway, enough about Rain Man. We could go down that, around that rabbit hole. I'm going Lyle Lovett and Julia Roberts.
Do you know what amazes me? Mm. How this could be the beginning of a phase out of LeBron. Because both those players are ball dominant.
Yep.
Barkley came out and said, I can't see how they're going to play together because they both need to control the offense. Clearly, this became Luka's team, you know, over the course of a day.
Yeah.
I don't know if LeBron's going to know that.
Well, if LeBron is smart, he'll realize it's far less heavy lifting for me. Mm-hmm. Let him do it, and I can help conserve my body a little bit more. I don't have to initiate the offense as much. It might even make LeBron better defensively. He's not expending as much energy on offense.
It's a great point. The star players got what they wanted. Anthony Davis didn't want to play center. Now he goes to a team that has good centers, and he can play the four and be happy.
You know what bothers me the most about this deal?
No.
Is that it's the Lakers. We love sports because of meritocracy. Now, sports is not always 100% meritocracy like we would wish it is, but it's fair. It's high as up as anything out there.
You get what you earn.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar left because he wanted to go somewhere that fit is better culturally and just more his personality. He had a couple teams that he would get traded to. One of them was LA. Shaq was on an Orlando team that was on the rise, going to the NBA Finals. The Lakers were not a great team, but Shaq wanted to be in Hollywood, and that got Kazam and Steel, two movies that are below 10% on Rotten Tomatoes. Anthony Davis wanted to go to the Lakers. LeBron James went to a Laker team that had missed the playoffs for five straight years. But why does everyone want to go there? Because of the sexy history, the past, because of the Pacific Ocean, because of California, because of LA, because of Hollywood, because of power brokers. You're not that far from digital land. What's it called?
Silicon Valley.
Digital land. God, I'm an idiot. That might be the dumbest thing I've said.
It's good you said that, Matt. It's very good.
Digital land. Beep, bop, boop. All the Lakers get these players not because they are really smart, a really smart organization. It's because where they are geographically. If the Lakers were in the middle of Iowa, none of these players ever go there. And I hate that, where it's based more on the Pacific Ocean than postseason success.
I'm going to take this back to hockey.
Sure.
And I'm going to bring this back home. And back when they were discussing instituting some form of salary cap in the NHL, all the Toronto hockey fans were like, yeah, we need a cap so that these players and spending can't get out of control. And I was like, you idiots. We live in Toronto. We are the Lakers.
Yeah.
We are the Yankees. Why are you pulling for a system that allows us to be neck and neck with Columbus?
I know.
You know, we are Chelsea. We are Man U. We are Bayern Munich. Okay? We are a global frickin' brand. And all of these Joe Lunch Buckets and Susie...
Housecoats. It was Susie House. That was Monty Burns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're like, we don't feel like players should be overpaid. Yeah, hold on a second. But what about our players? What if we overpaid them? And basically, we could just put together, speaking of Monty Burns, the softball team that he put together. That could be the Leafs, the hockey version of Monty Burns' softball team.
Yep. I know. And that's one of my hypocrisies where I hate that the Dodgers spend way more than anyone else, but I'd be okay if the Maple Leafs did.
Or the Jays.
Or the Jays.
I'm going to throw out a controversial hot take. You ready?
I'm ready.
The De'Aaron Fox deal going from Sacramento to San Antonio will ultimately be more impactful on the NBA than the Luka to LA deal.
It is a bit of a hot take because Luka's a top four player. And De'Aaron Fox, he's a good player. He's an all-star.
He's very good.
He's very good. He's not one of those guys, but there's only nine of those guys. He's in that next tier, which means he's a damn good player. I get it because if De'Aaron Fox can help the progress of Victor Wembanyama, if he helps Victor, it's going to help him. You could absolutely see Fox and Wembanyama being the most dangerous 1-2 punch in the NBA for the next decade.
This is the equivalent of Chicago drafting at number 5, Scottie Pippen. Because Michael can't be Michael unless he has a running mate.
Yep.
And maybe De'Aaron Fox isn't that guy, but I believe that he absolutely could be. We, with Wembanyama, as great as Luka is, Wembanyama can be greater.
Yes.
He is. I thought about this. He's 21 years old. He's the best defensive player in the NBA already. He averages 25 points a game, and he's the best defensive player in the NBA. He's a season and a half in, and he's 21 years old. What's this kid going to be like at 25? He could be Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain together.
Yep.
There is no ceiling. Nobody has ever seen anything like this before. As great as Luka is in LA, and as great as he's going to be, and he's going to put up numbers and all this, they aren't looking at a dynasty around Luka the way San Antonio is around Wemby. And bringing in De'Aaron Fox says, we know it. And I'm sure they brought in Chris Paul to begin the season to help the development. They didn't even last the season before they're like, oh, fuck, we got to win now.
Yeah.
That's how fast this kid is exploding. So when we think about what's actually, and as much as I love Luka, he's great. But Wembanyama can be Jordan also as a global brand because he travels. He's European. He stands out. He's different. It's an incredible story. He might be, if he starts winning championships, the most marketable star in the world.
The only thing that'll stop Wembanyama from winning a title is health. That's it. If he's healthy, he's going to win a title.
He might win 5.
Yeah. We have one equivalent to him playing now in terms of you look at the box score and you're confused, and that's Jokic. But Jokic is getting close to 30. Jokic is a much better offensive player, and it's not even close. But again, Victor's 21 years old, but Victor's always going to be more of an impact on defense. It's like what De'Aaron Fox could mean. And also, what I love about this is I just love different. And I love the fact that even though we saw this decades ago, but De'Aaron Fox said, I want to go to San Antonio. And he's a Texas guy, and I think he recognizes what Victor Wembanyama is going to be. And I love that about De'Aaron Fox. He's like, I have a familiarity geographically, and I see that star level, and I want to be near that star.
San Antonio is kind of like the Matt Cause of the NBA. It's not the market that you expect to be so successful, but somehow they've been the most successful, and they, no matter what happens, they're never far away from good luck.
Yes. Ah!
They drafted Kawhi. Kawhi fell apart. Oh no, let's be bad for a couple years. Here's Wembanyama.
It's true.
Before Tim Duncan, David Robinson, they've got a Cause-esque kind of lucky streak about them. And it's hard not to love them because they're so damn lovable.
Yes. Like,
we all want to hate you, Matt.
I know.
We really do.
It's so
but
true.
You're such a good guy. Nobody deserves the life that you've had. Nobody.
I know.
But if somebody has to have it, you're a good candidate.
Why not me? I appreciate it.
You have wine corks on your feet and ripped jeans, and you're wearing like a I don't know, like a kind of a
dress shirt.
What's the Joe Piscopo gangster character again? Johnny Dangerously. You're wearing a Johnny Dangerously dress shirt. You look like an idiot, Matt. Uh-huh. But everybody just looks at you and says, God, I love that guy. Look at me and they always say, are you off your meds?
I remember, by the way, I remember when I left the wine consignment company that I worked for years ago and I got fired from it. And within a couple weeks, TSN Radio started and I got hired. And Amy should have been happy for me. You know, it's like, you know, but she's like, only you would get that lucky when you get fired, then you get your dream job. And I'm like, why are you saying that with a tinge of resentment?
Matt, you left TSN and wound up somehow on Sun TV. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you've got your own show.
Yeah.
And I'm watching something about you like poking your head out from behind a tree going, you're dead to me.
Oh, yeah. That was a good bit.
That bit, I guess it was like... bad gambling breaks? Or?
No, it was fantasy football. It was
right.
Players that had shitty weeks.
Right. So you're hired to be a producer, but somehow you wind up on air.
Yeah.
Matt, I've never seen anyone in my whole life so consistently fall upwards.
Hooray.
But how do we not feel good about it?
Exactly.
You're so great. You are the San Antonio. We should all hate San Antonio.
We should.
Like, they're on their fourth generational player. Okay, it'd be like if the Bulls got Jordan four times.
Yeah.
They can't stop winning, but we love them for it.
Robinson, Duncan, Kawhi, and now Wembanyama.
All of them at different times, probably the best player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
What other team, even the Lakers, can say that?
Yeah, but the Lakers, they just go, hey, we're LA. And it was like, oh, you want to go there? Fucking Lakers.
I got a good ..
Oh, let's do it. By the way, we got like 7 minutes left. We haven't even talked the
Super Bowl. It's a wrestling themed one. Yeah. Well, should we not do it or should we just do the Super Bowl?
Well, by the way, real quick, jeffpollock.com. You need a lawyer, jeffpollock.com, Jeff with a G. He's our lawyer, still been our lawyer for ages. Eventually, Bob will get his full will done. I got it ages ago. Jeff was so nice. He was listening to the pod. He reached out to Amy and her broken ankle and was wishing her the best.
Very sweet guy.
Such a nice man.
It's funny about the will because I'm so much closer to death than you are. You'd think I'd be the one who's the motivated buyer.
Yeah. You should. You should get that.
And you're the one with death denial.
I know.
I'm like, yeah, everybody dies one day. What are you going to do?
So we'll see. We'll see. You know,
that's true.
Hasn't been proven.
As the San Antonio of life.
Yeah. And you have a child. You know, I mean, I'm looking after
which
Amy,
is actually killing me.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, it's not only a set of responsibilities, but it's, you know, if I was an insurance company, it's another reason why I'd go, maybe not this guy.
Your .. Can they, are they evergreen? Because I love the ..
Yeah,
dots.
They're so good though.
Okay, do the...
let's do the Super Bowl.
All right,
can I start off?
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm so bummed about Buffalo not making it over Kansas City that just fuck this game. Fuck this sport.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing is this is a great game. If you just break it down, one team going for a three-peat, never happened before, with... you know, a generational quarterback in Patrick Mahomes. But they're facing off against a team that's better. The offensive line better for the Eagles. The defensive line better. The linebackers better. The secondary better. The running back better. The wide receivers way better. Tight ends might be a draw. Might be even. Or give a slight edge, fine. Give a slight edge to Kansas City. But Kansas City has Mahomes, Andy Reid, and Spagnuolo. Everyone is taking Kansas City to win, much like last year's Super Bowl. San Fran had all the talent, but KC and Mahomes and Andy Reid. This year, Philly's got all the talent, but we're all going to bet the Chiefs.
I'm actually going to take the Eagles on this one, and that's because there's a defensive lineman that always comes to the fore as the game changer. Mm-hmm. We tend to talk quarterbacks, and for good reason, for obvious reasons. But whether it's Robert Quinn or Chris Jones, there's always somebody on that defensive line that when push comes to shove and you need a big play, a sack, a stop, a pressure, whatever, and maybe Jalen Carter's going to be that guy this year.
Yeah, he could be. I mean, the guy's an absolute beast, and he's been dominant in the
playoffs. I keep thinking about Robert Quinn when the Rams won.
Yeah.
And we all loved the guts of that team and Cooper Kupp and Matt Stafford, and it was also important. It was also great. But when there was about a six-minute stretch when Robert Quinn went nuts and won that game.
And it could be. It could be because Kansas City doesn't have a great offensive line, and their tackles get holding penalties, and they're not great. So
the Steve Spagnuolo factor is an issue, though. He is really smart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, just saving that blitz right till the end.
Oh, God.
I just right to the end on that this. Play.
Fuck. All right. I'm going to have one quick question here.
Yeah.
For .. Watch the Grammys. Will there ever be another band that is both good and popular again? Will there be another band? It was a night dominated by solo artists
yep.
and pop stars. Mm-hmm. And it made me think, like, the Beatles won record of the year. They've been around a while. They're not, you know... Can we ever have a great band? There's a documentary in the theaters starting up about the early years of Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Could we have another Zeppelin? Could we have another Pearl Jam?
It's been ages. You know, people
what was
are saying
the last great band?
Last great band.
Arcade Fire, maybe?
Coldplay? Arcade Fire?
Those are both early 2000s.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's been two decades. And some of it's been replaced with country. But even that's just more solo acts as well.
Mostly solo.
It's pop acts, hip hop, country.
It's mostly individuals.
Yes.
It's mostly, individuals. Yes. And the team is actually behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Producers.
Right.
And
yeah.
So you have your group, but the group is actually the tip of the iceberg is just the performer.
Right. God.
I miss bands.
I miss bands as well. I miss when the singer would go up to the guitarist. And they'd have a private joke and they'd be laughing and Keith Richards would be laughing and then him and Ronnie Woods would have him smoke and Mick Jagger's chicken strutting over there. I miss bands as well.
You know what it is about bands? When you think about athletics, there's individual athletes that we love. Muhammad Ali or Michael Phelps or
yeah.
any number of people who are just individual and great. But the story is limited to their actions. The great thing about a team is that there's a dynamic. And so the storylines are endless. And bands are like teams. When you really get into a band, and this is also going back to maybe more the 70s, 80s, and 90s, less so in the 2000s. But half the story is how they all relate to each other. What you just described about the Stones, it's not just the music. It's the culture of the Stones that draws you in. It's like cheering for a team.
Yeah.
I miss that.
I miss that as well. So
if you could bring back one band right now, one band from history to be big in 2025, who would it be?
I'm going to go with the Stones.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Stones. And yeah. you?
It's got to be the Beatles.
Yeah.
I'm bringing back the Beatles. I'm pretty big Zeppelin guy, but I'm an even bigger Beatles guy. God, Matt, like. You know how people, there's that meme about how guys are always thinking about the Roman Empire?
Yeah.
Every day, if you know, your mind drifts to the Roman Empire. I'm like that, but with the Beatles. Think about them every day, Matt.
So as we end this, I guess in honor of you missing bands and the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm.
you're rooting for the Eagles. Bye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.